Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 5, Narada's Teachings to Vasudev, text number 50.
Who were the burden of the earth? Asura, demons.
Rajanya, members of the kingly order. Hantave, in order to kill. Guptaye, for the protection. Satam, of the saintly devotees. Avitirnasya, for him who is descended. Niyavrityai, also for awarding liberation. Yasha, the fame. Loke, throughout the world. Vitanyate, has become spread. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. The Supreme Personality of Godhead descended to kill the demoniac kings who were the burden of the earth and to protect the saintly devotees. However, both the demons and the devotees are awarded liberation by the Lord's mercy. Thus, his transcendental fame has spread throughout the universe. Please repeat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead descended to kill the demoniac kings who were the burden of the earth and to protect the saintly devotees. However, both the demons and the devotees are awarded liberation by the Lord's mercy. Thus his transcendental fame has spread throughout the universe. Purport. A doubt may arise as to how the Supreme Personality of Godhead descends to this material world. And since he is the omnipotent creator of millions of universes, why do the devotees glorify as wonderful the Lord's activities, such as his killing a witch named Putana by sucking out her life through her breast? Although such activities are certainly beyond the scope of ordinary human beings, why should they be considered wonderful when executed by the omnipotent personality of Godhead? The answer is given in this verse by the words, Niyavrityai, the Lord killed the demons, not because he was envious of them, but in order to give them spiritual liberation. Thus, the causeless mercy of the personality of Godhead in liberating both the devotees and the demons by his inconceivable pastimes clearly distinguishes the Lord from any other living entity, either a man or a demigod. It is stated, Mukti Pradata Sarvesham Vishnur Evana Samshaya. Only Vishnu can give liberation beyond birth and death. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has pointed out that generally the demons are awarded impersonal liberation in the Brahman effulgence, whereas the devotees are given the superior benediction of love of Godhead in the spiritual planets. Thus the Lord exhibits his causeless mercy toward all classes of living entities, and his fame is spread throughout the universe. Because Krishna is transcendental, his fame is not different from his personal incarnation. So as the Lord's fame expands, the entire universe is gradually liberated. These are some of the unique characteristics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The verse again, Bhubhara Sura Rajanya Hantave Guptaye Sitam Avitirnasi Nirvrityai Vishaloke Vitanyate. Supreme Personality of Godhead descended to kill the demoniac kings who were the burdens of the earth and to protect the saintly devotees. However, both the demons and the devotees are awarded liberation by the Lord's mercy. Thus, his transcendental fame is spread throughout the universe. Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya De Sitarane. Here Krishna is being glorified because he is equal to everyone. Of course, Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita, Ye tamam prapajante tamstataiva bhajamyaham mama vartmanu vartante manusha partha sarvashaha. That everyone, as they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects. Although Krishna is equal to everyone, he is equally awarding or reciprocating with every living entity according to their desire to relate to him. And then again in the ninth chapter, Krishna says, Samaham Samabhuteshu Name Dveshtosti Napriyaha Yevadanti Tumam Bhaktya Mai Te Teshu Chapyaham. That I'm envious of it, no one. I'm equal to everyone. And yet, whoever takes shelter of me in devotion is my friend, is in me, and I'm also in them. In other words, generally speaking, in the material world, Krishna is reciprocating as Paramatma what people desire and what they deserve. Just like the judge, as Krishna says also in the Bhagavad Gita, Nichamatani Karmani Nivandanti Dhananjaya Udasinadvarasina Masakam Teshu Karmasu. That I'm ever detached, all this work cannot bind me, I'm ever detached, seated as though neutral. Krishna had previously said, Sarabhutani Kondiya, Mortiyak Sambhavantiya, Tasam Brahmasamam Jyotiya. Oh, that's all right. Sarabhutani Kondiya, Mortiyak Sambhavantiya, Tasa Brahma Maham Jyotiya. No, that's wrong word. Sara Bhutani Kuntiya Mortyaksam Bhavantiya Kalpashe Punastani Kalpadova Sri Jamyaham. No, that's a different verse. That's the 14th chapter. Sara Bhutani Kuntiya Prakatiyami This is the 9th chapter, Bhagavad Gita, text number 6 or 5. Kalpashe punastani kalpa do vishijamyaha sarva bhutani kuntiya prakritim yanti mamikam kalpashe punastani kalpa do vishijamyaha. That's it. So it means sarva bhutani kuntiya, all these living entities, prakritim yanti mamikam, enter into my nature. Kalpashe Pranastami, at the end of the Kalpa. And at the beginning of the Kalpa, I send them forth again. In other words, all this whole cosmic creation is going on just in one breath of Mahavishnu. A little hard for us to accept that in one breath the whole cosmic manifestation takes place, the whole 311 trillion 40 billion years of Lord Brahma takes place in just the exhalation of Mahavishnu. And then when he inhales again, which I guess takes another 311 trillion 40 billion years, everything is annihilated. Seems kind of senseless what's going on here in one sense. Except for the liberation of the souls from the material existence, it's all pretty useless. It's going so quickly, it's practicing, there's no time to do anything. And then Krishna says, Prakritim Svam Avashtavya Vishvijami Punak Punak Putagramam Imam Krishnam Avasham Prakritira Vishat. Again and again the cosmic manifestation is coming forth, and again it's being annihilated. Not for one life of Brahma, but for one Brahma after another is being born and is being annihilated. Not only one Brahma, but unlimited Brahmas, practically speaking, are taking their birth, going through the whole lifespan, and then being annihilated at the end, time and time again. Prabhupada in one place says that Brahma's life is just like a flash of lightning in the cosmic sky, so brief. And then Krishna says, I'm doing this, but I'm not bound by it. It can't bind me. I'm ever detached, seated as though neutral. So Krishna is like the judge. He didn't ask for us to come to the material world, but he provides the means by which the living entities can live here, survive, and try to enjoy, and hopefully try to make some spiritual advancement, try to get free from the material energy. So he provides everything. At no point is he attached to the material energy. If everyone decided that they go back to Godhead, Krishna would be very happy. But he provides material nature for those souls who don't want to be in the spiritual world, and therefore they have to be somewhere. So they're here. And whatever is going on, Krishna perfectly is arranging according to what we desire and what we deserve. But he has nothing to do, in one sense, with the creation and annihilation of the material world. It's all going on because of the desires of the individual souls. As Krishna says, Narate kasichit papam, na papam sikritim vibhum, agyane navritam jnana, tena muyanti jantava. Nor does the Supreme Lord assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. The embodied beings, however, are bewildered by the ignorance which covers their real knowledge. And therefore, because we're covered by ignorance, we become subjected to subtle desires that arise within the mind. Prabhupada writes that the desires, material desires, are a subtle form of conditioning for the soul. So because we're attracted to subtle material desires, therefore we become entangled in the material energy. And then, because of our attraction to the subtle material desires, Krishna makes the arrangements. By Krishna's arrangement, just like a cloud, by the wind's arrangement, the cloud can be moved this way or the cloud can be moved that way. So by our desire, Krishna can move us to heaven, or he can move us to hell, or he can bring us back to the spiritual world. It all rests with where we're dovetailing our desires. But Krishna, his advice is, give up the material desires and take shelter in me. He doesn't advise either to go to heaven or to hell, or anywhere in between. He advises people to get out of the material world, to surrender to him. Therefore, Krishna is perfectly neutral to everyone, which is quite inconceivable, because in the material world, when we have material bodies, those people who give the things that we want for our sense gratification, they naturally become our friends. Have you noticed that or not? If someone is cooperating with us for our sense gratification, whether gross or subtle, then we consider them generally as our friends. And if people are putting obstacles or actually directly interfering or threatening our happiness or our material happiness, then they become our enemies. Therefore, friends and enemies in the material world are judged simply by whether people are helping us or putting obstacles in front of our sense gratification. If someone praises us, they become our friend. If someone criticizes us, generally they become our enemy. And it doesn't really matter sometimes. Just like one day a devotee was on book distribution And one of the techniques of selling books is you flatter people on the street, following in the footsteps of Prabodhananda Saraswati, taking a straw between our teeth, going up to people and flattering them, falling down at their feet 1,000 times. Oh, great personality. Oh, best of the people in the world, etc. So people get flattered, and what happens? That, generally speaking, they become more receptive. Therefore, the devotee was flattering people on the street, and one older lady, he was flattering her and said, "Oh, you're just flattering me." She said, "But I'll give you a donation anyhow." So people flatter us, then we generally feel a bit more kind towards them, more favorable. And if people criticize us, we feel threatened by them. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but names get to me after a while. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Jnana vijnana chiptatma kutastha vijitendriyaha yuksitate yogi samalostras makanshanaha. That a person is considered to be situated in transcendence and is called a yogi and in self-control when he sees everything, whether it be pebbles, stones, or gold, with an equal vision. So one is considered to be jnana and vijnana, both theoretical and applied knowledge, one can see the material world equally. He's not bewildered by the idea of gaining or losing anything in the material world. But one is considered even more further advanced, sarin mitya udasina, madhyasta dvesha bandishu, sadushva pitapapeshu, samabhudira vishishate. One is considered even more advanced than that when he sees everyone, sarin, the friend. Mitra, means even a greater friend. Surin Mitra Udasina means one who's neutral, the mediator, or the neutral. Asina, the enemy. Madhyasta, one who's in between, or the mediator. Madhyasta Dveshu, one who's envious. Bandishu, a very close friend. Surin Mitra Udasina, Madhyasta Dveshu Bandishu, Sadhu, and the pious and the sinful, the papi and the sadhu, everyone with this equal eye. So what is that equal eye? Obviously the equal eye is not that the dog and the Brahmin, they're exactly the same. Just like there may be one person driving a Jaguar, Ferrari, or some car like that. Another one may be riding a bicycle. It's the same person, but they're obviously in different vehicles. You can't say, because it's the same person, therefore the vehicles must be the same. And it's unfair to criticize the bicycle for going slower than the Jaguar. Because after all, the same person's driving them. No, we have to be able to discriminate. If you think that a bicycle can go as fast as a Jaguar, that is the car Jaguar, or even the animal Jaguar, then if you're completely fixed in that idea, that's Mayavadi philosophy. Just like the Mayavadis say everything is the same, and then everyone is one, everyone's the same. So if that was true, then everything you have is actually mine. Because after all, you and me are the same, and therefore your car is actually my car. So if you give me the keys to your car, it's the same as you having them. One time I did that with some person who came to the Sunday feast, was fixed in this idea, adamant about the fact that everyone was the same, you are me and I am you. So therefore I said, well, if that's true, then give me the keys to your car, because then they're my car. It's my car. So he did it. And then he began to shake his arms. He got really nervous. And then he said, "Give me back my keys." I said, "No, they're my keys." He said, "You're mistaken." He said, "No, give me back my keys." So I gave him back because I recognized that they actually belonged to him. If we went before the judge, I could always claim, but judge, him and myself were the same. It makes no difference whether he has the keys or I have the keys, because we're exactly the same person. Unfortunately for me, then the judge probably wouldn't accept it. So the idea that everyone's the same, all living entities the same, in one sense, they're simultaneously one and different. The quality of the soul may be the same in all living entities, but they're in different bodies due to their previous pious and sinful activities. But a learned person can see both. He can see the equality as well as the differentiation between them. In the material world, generally, in the mode of ignorance, we see only the differentiation. And in the mode of passion, we see the oneness, that everyone's equally bad in ignorance. And in passion, we see only the differentiation. And in goodness, we can see both the oneness and the differentiation, the simultaneously one and difference. So what to speak of Krishna? He knows that we're all asleep in the material world. He knows that someone's taking the position of a demon, someone's taking the position of a devotee, but by nature, everyone is factually a devotee in their real position. And therefore, although Krishna, he treats apparently people differently, but ultimately Krishna is simply reciprocating the way people want to deal with Krishna. For instance, when the demigods pray to Krishna that, "My dear Krishna, please give me protection," then Krishna comes and gives them protection. And when the demons are afraid of Krishna and afraid that Krishna is going to come and kill them and become very disturbed and want to kill Krishna, then Krishna comes and kills them. If the demigods want to kill Krishna or impede Krishna in some way, like Lord Indra, then Krishna reciprocates with them and deals with them accordingly. And when if the demons take shelter of Krishna, like Prahlad Maharaj, then Krishna gives them shelter. So it is not that Krishna doesn't like the demons, he likes the devotees. Anyone who follows Krishna in any way they want, then Krishna reciprocates with them. But ultimately, anyone who comes in contact with Krishna gets the benediction of becoming purified. Because fire acts like fire wherever they are. Krishna is always fire. And although it appear to our external vision and our understanding that here is Vishnu, because actually little baby Krishna is sitting on the lap of Mother Jasoda, he can hardly open his eyes. Here is a nurse, Putana, coming to kill him, to poison him, and it appears that little baby Krishna has changed his mood. He's become a blood-sucking little kid. And in that mood, Mother Jasoda better watch out also. Because, he got a little taste of blood, and who knows what's going to happen. No, Krishna is always Krishna. He's always a little baby in the mood of a little baby. He doesn't change that mood, but because his expansion, Vishnu, comes along with him, when it's time to kill the demon, Vishnu kills the demon. But then you can say, well, Vishnu is Krishna. You're cheating us, because Vishnu is the same little boy in a different mood, killing people. So actually, within Krishna is that tendency to kill people. It just manifests itself sometimes in strange ways. He has a split personality that comes out in different ways. And then he blames it on his other personality, the other side. And you never know which side of his personality is going to come out. Krishna is always Krishna, and that's his pastime. As Krishna in Vrindavan, He's not in any other mood in Vrindavan. But Vishnu sometimes comes to Vrindavan because Krishna wants him to. Generally, Vishnu is the super soul in the heart. So in that sense, he's in Vrindavan also. And Vishnu is reciprocating with people in a whole different realm. In Vrindavan, there are no demons trying to kill Krishna. There are demons there, but like the Kaliya serpent in Vrindavan, in Goloka Vrindavan, he's one of the carriers of Vishnu, and Krishna drives him around the Jamuna with the gopis. Sometimes they get on Kaliya serpent and they ride around the Jamuna on Kaliya. So there are demons there, but they're all devotees actually. Here they manifest themselves as demons, or at least personalities represent. Kaliya, serpent here, acts as a demon for some time, of course. So Vishnu, he deals with people in that realm, because in that realm there are realms where demons exist and Vishnu deals with them. They don't exist in Goloka Vrindavan, so Krishna doesn't have to deal with them. And Vrindavan here has many layers. So the layer that Krishna and his devotees live on is the Goloka Vrindavan, or Gokul Vrindavan, and there are actually really no demons there. They only manifest themselves on one layer of Vrindavan, where Krishna has to deal with, superficially with demons as part of his pastimes, his Bhoma-lila. So on that level, then he doesn't even deal with them. It's his expansion who deals with demons in other realms. But even there, Krishna has exactly the same mood. It is not that he thinks, now it's time to get it, you know, this guy has been criticizing me for so long. Now he's finally come to where I am, and now I have a perfectly good right to just annihilate him. And I feel good about it. Shishupal is blasting me for 99 times. I was just waiting for the 100th time. Now it's time. No, Krishna has exactly the same mood all the time in all the different places. He doesn't change his mood, but he reciprocates, and out of love and affection he kills the demons. When Arjuna was chasing after Ashwatthama, it is described that Arjuna's eyes were red like the copper balls, but Krishna's eyes are still lotus petals. So there it says that the personality of God is absolute. He didn't get disturbed at Ashwatthama and his eyes became furiously red. No, his eyes are always remaining like lotus petals, because he sees everyone as his eternal servant. And therefore, when the father slaps the child, in the ideal world, it's not out of animosity, it's to instruct the child. When Krishna slaps the demon, he falls down, then the demon becomes liberated by contact with Krishna, or at least he becomes elevated. So Krishna knows he's actually benedicting the demons by coming in and killing them, or fighting with them. He doesn't do it out of animosity, it's part of his benediction. He can immediately, when the demon comes and hits him with a club, he can't go up to them and, you know, and kiss them. It would be a little inappropriate. People would wonder, you know, what kind of God is this? Obviously, he's a little strange. He doesn't understand time, place, and circumstance. That even an ordinary person can understand time, place, and circumstance, what to speak of the personality of Godhead. So, apparently, to our vision, he's doing something terrible to the demons. Apparently, Kaliyavana, Jarasandha is coming, Krishna is firing his arrows at his army. There are so many Akshahini divisions, millions of elephants and warriors, whatever. He's firing so many arrows, their heads are falling off, their arms are being separated from their bodies. The elephants are lying dead in the pools of blood, in the ocean of blood he's created. And they appear like little islands in the ocean of blood. The arms and legs of the warriors seem like seaweed. Their ornaments from their bodies seem like there are pebbles on the shore of the ocean of blood. The corpses are floating everywhere. The horses look like fish, sharks in the ocean of blood. And it's a ghastly scene. And then Krishna's expansion comes along Baladeva with his club and starts killing so many soldiers himself that the ocean of blood overflows. You start thinking, I mean, talk about bloodthirsty people. You know, terrorists. I mean, this is terrible to people. But it's not terrible because they're all becoming benefited. If they would have died safely on their bed, some of them may have gone to the lower regions. But because they're coming in contact with Krishna, they're all being elevated way beyond apparently what they deserve. Therefore, it's glorious whatever Krishna is doing. It's beneficial. And whatever we're doing, and especially we're criticizing and seeing in our mundane vision, then that's a disaster for ourselves. So, unless one can understand things properly, then it's just like taking poison. To hear Mayavadi philosophy, and especially Mayavadi interpretation of Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, is poisonous for the people taking it, because they cannot then understand the actual situation of Krishna and factually what's going on. They're simply seeing it through demoniac interpretation. Therefore, Prabhupada used to criticize above anything else mundane scholars interpreting Bhagavad Gita. Because all they can see is from their mundane vision, they don't accept Krishna as God, they don't accept transcendental potency, they don't accept transcendental energy, they only see things mundane because they're mundane, and therefore their interpretation is mundane, and therefore because it's mundane, therefore whoever reads it will simply become more mundane. But Bhagavad Gita is meant to bring people out of mundane life to spiritual life, not to kill their spiritual inspiration. Therefore, the conclusion is we should appreciate Krishna's coming and fighting with the demons, and we should appreciate Krishna's activities in general, that they're all good, and we should not appreciate, we should try to understand that our only problem is that we don't understand things properly, and that those who are sane and understand things properly will find out that whatever Krishna does is wonderful. So, we'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Would you like to tell us something about Ramananda?
Yes. He was a great devotee in the Madhva, in the Ramanuja, well, I guess it's not. It's the Ramanuja Sampradaya. He was he taught Vishistha Dvaita philosophy, that the living entity is simultaneously is different from Krishna. He didn't emphasize as much as Madhvacharya the difference. But he taught that the living entity is different from Krishna, but it has some similarity. And since he's one of the acharyas appearing in South India, especially he was interested in defeating Mayavadi philosophy, and as we can see in his history of his life, not only Mayavadi philosophy, but the Shakta philosophy, those who are worshipping the energies of Krishna rather than Krishna himself. So he was a great scholar and a great devotee, and he was one of our four bona fide sampradayas. He was the leader of one of the four bona fide sampradayas, and he gave part of the philosophy that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu later introduces, Achintya Beda Beda Tattva, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Vishnu Swami, and Nimbarka. They all gave different parts of the philosophy that we're getting as our Achintya Beda Beda Tattva philosophy. So they dealt especially Madhvacharya and Ramanujacharya with the idea of simultaneously one but different. That we're not God, but we have the same quality as God. While the other aspects of our sampradaya deal with the relationship between God and the living entities, how Krishna has spiritual rasas with different living entities, and that those rasas are eternal. Therefore, we take shelter of Ramanujacharya because he's one of our great predecessors who introduced Vaishnava philosophy, especially after Lord Buddha. After Buddha stopped animal sacrifice and decried the Vedas, and Sankaracharya came to reestablish the Vedic knowledge, and then the Acharyas had to come to add on to it or to defeat the Mayavadi philosophy that Sankaracharya gave and give the actual interpretation, the actual meaning of the Vedas, to reestablish it. So Ramanujacharya is our first principal Acharya who reestablished the actual understanding of the Vedas, and that way defeating Mayavadi philosophy. Yes.
What does one do when the mood of serving against the Vedas makes one harder than others?
The mood?
The mood of serving against the Vedas makes one's heart harder than something.
Well, I guess it seems to be a little contradiction in terms. If you actually have the mood, or if you have a good mood in serving advanced devotees, then the heart becomes softer. And if you have the wrong mood, then the heart will become harder. So that's called offense. Just like we have the proper attitude towards Krishna, then our heart becomes softer. And if we have the wrong attitude, then our heart becomes harder. Therefore, we should find out what's the value, what is the mood of the advanced devotee. The advanced devotee, his mood is to serve the other advanced devotees, and that way serve everyone. So a real advanced devotee wants to serve everyone. And if we don't want to serve the advanced devotee, it's usually because we don't want to serve anyone but ourselves. So obviously our heart will become harder and harder, the more we just want to serve ourselves and no one else. Whereas their love, even we won't even have love for our own bodies, because we'll sacrifice even our own bodies just to serve our false ego.
How do you deal with a more advanced devotee if they continue to listen?
What's that?
How do you deal with a more advanced devotee if they continue to listen?
Well, generally, how do we deal with it?
How should I deal with it?
Probably not to deal with it. Because we may not understand what's going on, and if we get involved, we may commit more offenses against both of them. In the fourth canto, it says that sometimes we don't understand the dealings of what's going on in between devotees. And apparently, there may be offenses, and still, but if we get involved, then we'll simply commit offenses. So better to go to other authorities and explain our situation, and let them work it out. The people who are actually supposed to work those things out. And if there's no one like that, then we should just stay neutral rather than just get unnecessarily involved in those things. Yes?
You're talking about kaya and spiritual is that kaya, the kaya and the two are the same living entity?
Maybe. After all, the kaliya in this material world became enlightened by Krishna's footprints. So maybe he was qualified to go there and serve Krishna as Kaliya in the spiritual world, but not necessarily. Sometimes it is said that Krishna, he has his pastimes here, and very special souls come and participate in them. So sometimes they may be liberated souls, and sometimes they may be actual personalities who are taking that role, and they're not necessarily have that rasa, but that I don't know for sure. In this particular case, the Kaliya, the Krishna marked with his footprints. He's still there in Fiji somewhere, it says. But there is a Kaliya in the spiritual world. Whether this Kaliya is an expansion or not, that I don't know. Yes?
I've heard that Kaliya and Garuda are related. Some use Kaliya performs services that Garuda performs.
Sometimes Kaliya moves Krishna around. I mean, this riding Krishna's pastimes. He's a carrier also. This is in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. The gopis, they all got in Kali's hoods and started to dance with Krishna on top of the hoods. I mean, that's a big rasa dance, so Kali must be pretty big also. Ultimately, if you're a servant, then you get to utilize all your talents in Krishna's service. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantharaya Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.